Welcome to the Faith Church Peshtigo podcast. You can connect with us online at faithpeshtigo.com. We're also on Facebook. Just search for Faith Church Peshtigo. Today's podcast features a conversation between Pastor Jay and Pastor Robbie talking about the sermon from September 19th, 2021.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church podcast. I'm your host, Jay. And joining me is Robbie, who I was hoping was going to do a spit take right there.
It was close. It came dangerously close.
Yeah. So we are... Welcome back, man.
Hey, thanks.
You've been away from the podcast for a while.
It feels like it.
So my question is it that... Wait, no, it's only been 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Never mind. There goes my whole bit.
Mm. You had a bit about my absence?
Yeah, it was just that you... I thought that you... When I was gone, either I thought, did you get so used to doing it with Jeff? And then... 1 week back with me and you're like, that's too much.
Well,
and you passed me off to Jeff.
You are a little bit more than Jeff.
Right.
You've got more energy.
Sometimes I feel like you guys take turns babysitting me on the podcast. That's kind of what it feels like sometimes.
Are we that transparent?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Mm. It's pretty obvious when I say, who's going to do the podcast with me this week? And you look at Jeff and you say, I did it last time.
You're up.
In the same voice that my wife says, I put them to bed last night. It's the same voice.
Is it?
I did it last time. Okay. And then, but I'm delightfully oblivious to it. I'm like, all right, let's go.
That's good. You're in no way impeded.
No.
We just need to recharge our introvert energy.
Right. So let's recharge it, man. You recharge not your introvert energy, but your melancholical.
Melancholia?
Melancholia. Is that a... Okay.
Mm-hmm. So not melancholical.
So I gotta ask you though, yeah. When you did an intro this week when you're talking about joy,
yeah.
And you said that you didn't want to be typecast because you feel like you always preach about being sad. Is that a thing?
I've done quite a few. I've definitely done a few on. I mean, I did one like I've only done one that was directly like on depression, but I definitely. Lean more toward the here's how to work through discouragement, which is important and helpful,
yeah.
I think. But definitely felt time to just lean heavy into why we should be living with joy.
Right. So if you hear noise in the background, it is because we are recording this while Awana and Wednesday night activities are going on.
That's right. It's a madhouse on the other side of this door.
So normally we kind of lock down the office and put up signs that say recording podcast.
We like to pretend like we're professional.
Right. We like to make it, but tonight I was just like, whatever. We just need to roll with it. And so if you hear screaming in the background, that's what's going on.
Yep. Also, your flailing arms keeps bumping the microphone, which...
So well, if you gave me headphones that worked, Robbie, then I would know that.
That's...
I just
almost
want to put that out
critique.
There. I just want to put that out there. I'm functioning with one ear right now, and I can't tell when I'm doing something obnoxious. Anyway, your melancholy. So yeah, so that typecast. So here's the thing that I was thinking about when you said that. I think that in the last 20 years or so, it has been a healthy development in the church at large, and certainly we have been in that as well. That we've been very much a part of that to develop a what we would call kind of a robust theology of suffering.
Yes, agreed.
Because there definitely was a season in the church where everything was kind of happy, happy, joy, joy. And it was just like, if you have been a faith, then you are happy all the time, which kind of led to people feeling like they had to keep up kind of some appearances. And mm-hmm. then not only that, but then when hard things hit, a lot of people struggle with, what did I do wrong? Did I disobey God? Did I hear from him incorrectly? Like, why are these hard things happening? And so a healthy correction in the church at large has been to say, you know what? Scripture is very clear that if you follow Jesus, there will be suffering.
Yeah.
And that God does some of his greatest work in suffering. And so we want people to understand that if you're going to follow Jesus, that's going to happen. And Peter, saying, do not be surprised, the fiery trials, when they come upon you as though something strange were happening to you. We are told to count it all joy when we meet various trials of different kinds. We are prepared constantly for suffering. And so I think it's a good and healthy correction in the church to address that. But then what has happened, I think there's, as often happens when you kind of, you know, it's like if you're steering a ship, Robbie.
Hmm.
If you are going across and you kind of pick a point, you realize you're kind of drifting off course, and then you correct. Well, sometimes you overcorrect or you start drifting.
Right.
Like, you have to constantly be watching that. And I think that that's happened a little bit. There's a little bit of overcorrection in some circles. And I think for me, it's like we forget, but we're supposed to be joyful still. Like, right. Joyful doesn't mean fake. Actually, to be obedient to God would be joyful in it. So have you experienced a similar thing, or what would you?
Yeah, I mean, really, that was the conviction that I was wrestling with in wanting to step back from not wanting to overcorrect, not wanting to say, well, if the problem was we made it seem like you have to be happy all the time, and that's not healthy or biblical, then the solution is not to overcorrect to the opposite extreme and say, therefore, we must wallow in misery and always feel bad about our sin and whatnot. Like, we need to address our sin. We need to be honest about that. We need to be honest about our doubt. We need to be honest about discouragement and depression in the church. That was something that was not talked about for a really long time. And that led to a certain type of unhealth. But then to dwell on that at the exclusion of biblically commanded joy is also not healthy. So, you know, if the command is weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice, hopefully that means we are both weeping and rejoicing, and that there's a time for that. You know, the story that I shared about my friend in India, while he is running into the jungle with his family while his house is being burned to the ground in an attempt to murder him, my guess is he's not smiling then, that in that moment that there is, that in the moment of suffering, he doesn't have a plastic smile plastered to his face and sheer delight. The difference is after the fact, when he looks back at that, what he dwells on is, look at how my Jesus provided for me and my family in this moment. And so the joy for him after the fact comes from not pretending like that wasn't legitimate suffering, but instead of fixating on the suffering, he fixates on the Jesus who was with him and carried him through it.
Yeah, that's good. So right there, kind of, I was thinking about how often we, you know, when we're in one ditch, we want to correct it by falling into the other ditch,
right?
Or we think that the opposite of something is actually the correction when it's not. So for example, the correction to inauthentic joy is not melancholy,
right?
It's authentic joy,
correct?
Like, it's the, if you want to correct fake joy, it should be real joy. But you're right, like, it is good that we address these other issues, and, you know, the dark night of the soul and the struggles and that, but we have to remember that the joy is supposed to be our norm. Like, that should be how we function. It reminds me a little bit, though, that correction reminds me of how, for a long time in the church, a lot of people's experience in the church is that you couldn't be honest about sin in your life. You couldn't be honest about any kind of battle. Like, you were supposed to act as though you've already conquered all these things. You couldn't acknowledge weakness. And there was an overcorrection in the church for that, to where it became almost like our sin, we were wearing our sin as a badge of honor.
Mm.
And it reminds me a little bit of Paul's letter to the church in Corinth. You know, like, you're condoning these things. You're like celebrating these things that even the world looks at as horrible. And so that's another example of where, an overcorrection, of where we get into a culture where we try to outdo one another, with, you know, with worse things so that we can show how authentic we are.
Right.
But, you know, it's better than authentic sin is authentic holiness. Like, it's even better.
Amen.
Like some victory. And so hopefully our testimonies are always, because we are still on this side of eternity, we will always be battling sin. So we will always have testimony of how we are fighting against our flesh and areas where we have fallen, areas where we are weak. And then we should also have stories of victory and stories of where we've been sanctified and where God is giving us victory in certain areas. And that should be a joyful thing. So it just popped in my head as just another way that we sometimes, we forget that the answer to our falling into a ditch is not the other ditch. It is Jesus.
Yeah. Yes.
So with that, you mentioned, you kind of touched on this in the sermon, but, so going back to you saying how you are, you see yourself as a relatively melancholy person, which I think it's just the artist in you. I don't typically see you as melancholy. I just see you as quiet. Are those different?
It's because you don't see what's simmering below.
I don't see. Sometimes I can see it in your eyes. Like right. When I ask who's doing the podcast with me, then I see.
And before I answer, you go, "Oh, not you. I'll ask Jeff."
Yeah, I'll ask Jeff. So for people who struggle with that, or they would say, you know, my default personality is not what people would consider joyful. Does that mean they're not actually joyful? Like, what do we mean when we say joyful? Like, how would you differentiate being joyful, like biblically joyful, and what the world would see as joyful, what we would define normally as joyful?
That is a good question, because it's going to flesh out differently for different personality types.
Right.
So your joy is going to look very different from my joy. The extrovert joy versus introvert joy, or culturally joy, is going to look different. Mm-hmm. Joy in Russian culture is going to look very different than joy in Brazilian culture. Just because the cultural norms are so different that it's going to either put fences around what that's going to look like, or there's going to be, you're going to let the leash off. So like in Brazil, they are a delightful culture, right? It's big emotions. It's a very extroverted culture. When I was in Russia, I'm looking around at everybody and I think, hey, I kind of look a little Russian, right? Like I've got similar features. And so when I was, I had asked them at one point, hey, could I pass as a Russian? Like if you just saw me walking down the street, would you think that I was Russian? And everybody at the table burst out into laughter, like I had said something really clever and hilarious. And
you had.
And evidently I had, yes. And they're like, oh no, nobody is thinking that you are Russian. I was like, why? And they said, because you smile. And I said, what do you mean? Like, we don't do that here. Like, it's not really something that, and I thought, that's a weird statement, because I mean, they're smiling as they're laughing at my accidental joke. So it's not like there's no happiness, just culturally me walking down the street like an American, like I stand out as a sore thumb in that culture. So there, it's going to look different. It's not like you just say these are the habits of a joyful person. Other than, I would say, an internal trajectory toward delighting in Christ and all that He is and all that He's doing. That what made my Indian friend so unique, and the people that come to my mind when I think this is a joyful person. It's a wide range of personality types, but what is common throughout is a steadfast faith in God that allows them to look at nearly every circumstance and see what God is doing in that. And so they're able to find something positive and beautiful in every circumstance. Mm-hmm. And so there's a contentment. There is a, I'm reluctant to use the term optimism, because I think that can be such a trite word, but the difference between,
I think hopeful
is a much better word. Yes, there is a hope in every circumstance.
I think what you're touching on there is kind of what I was getting at. I think I could have asked it better with synonyms, that that the world might use for joy, but that are actually what we would use as biblical synonyms. And obviously, you know, one of the synonyms that the world uses for joy is happiness, or, you know, or equating it with some kind of physical response, like someone who laughs all the time, or somebody that's, I think a lot of times if people just say out, if you go on the street and you say, hey, who do you know that someone is joyful? Who do you know that's joyful? They'd probably point to someone who's laughing a lot, smiling all the time, you know, coming up, putting their arm around you, whatever. Those don't mean you're not joyful, but those are, I would say, are more worldly synonyms for that. Whereas I think biblically, I think hopeful is one. I like you said content. I know what you mean by optimism, but yeah, there's delight, a looking forward, a looking like people who basically it's just people who are so secure in the idea that God is in their midst, that God is working, all things together for good, that every turn around the corner is another gift of mercy, of kindness, of more depth of knowing Jesus. That's how you can be joyful even in the midst of suffering. So you might be weeping, and yet I still think if we're going in that definition of joy, like a biblical definition, it can be hard to picture, like, well, how can I be joyful when I'm sobbing in grief? Well, if you look at those other words and say, well, biblically it's closer to hopeful. Well, I can be hopeful when I'm sobbing with grief. It's I can be content in knowing that God has given me everything that he has for me, and that he will continue to provide for me, and that there's nothing I'm missing. I can be hopeful that he is going to work things together for good, that the sun is going to come up again, that he is going to bring healing, that he's going to bring restoration. All these different things that I think are more, because I'm just trying to get a handle on it and try to help people kind of put some tangible, because if we just say like rejoice and that we should be joyful, I think we need to figure out, okay, well, what do we mean by that? What does it look like? And because for both personality types, right? So the melancholy person, or the person who's more quiet, like the Russians out there who are listening to our podcast. And when I was over there, the same thing. This would not shock you. I would never pass for Russian. Like they just, it's not going to happen. But I talk to and smile at strangers. Mm-hmm. That's like immediately, clearly I'm not.
Dead giveaway.
Which is funny because I've been in other cultures where I'm too reserved.
Right.
And so it is different no matter what. But if you can get away from that idea, but then what do you get towards? Like I can say, well, it doesn't mean you're just happy all the time, but it does mean something though. It's also not just some flittering thought or something that you just can't really grasp. And there's nothing that I can check in myself. Like if I say, am I being joyful right now? I'm going to ask myself questions like, are you hopeful? Are you content? Are you, are you excited about what God is doing? Do you believe that he's going to keep working in this, giving the benefit of the doubt for people and for situations?
Because I would argue the opposite of joy is not sadness.
Right.
I would argue that the opposite of joy is bitterness and discontentment. Mm. So
that's good.
Maybe it's helpful to define it by its opposite, kind of like that growing in your understanding of, you know, may your face shine upon us, is it helped me to understand that as, well, what is the opposite? Mm-hmm. The opposite is him turning away in shame or in disconnection. So if I look at it as not, are you joyful or are you sad, but are you joyful or are you discontent? Are you joyful or are you bitter? Do you look at your current circumstances? Because happiness, I would say, is an emotion you feel based on circumstances. Joy is not an emotion you feel based on circumstances. It's a posture of your heart. And so there is my posture toward my circumstances, toward toward my heart, toward God, toward the people around me, toward my circumstances? Is the posture of my heart one of hopeful joy or one of bitterness and discontentment? So that, and I can have joy even with a very subdued personality.
Right.
Maybe not stoic, right? Because stoic, you're starting to move into apathy and
right.
Like, but
yeah,
you can
be stoic.
You can be reserved,
right.
And joyful,
right?
And you can be boisterously joyful, but so to my more reserved brethren and sistren out there, that we're not saying we all need to become extroverts or we all need to become boisterous or gregarious. Like it's simply when you consider God, the people around you, yourself, and your circumstances, is the posture of your heart one of hopeful joy or one of discontentment and bitterness?
I think that's really helpful to define it by what it's not, because that is a question that I can ask myself. Like if I meet a circumstance, I can say, okay, what I want to fight against is I want to fight against bitterness taking root in my heart. I want to fight against discontent. I want to fight against... I want to be hopeful for that particular person, that particular situation. I think that's a really good barometer. Like when anything happens and I'm saying like, okay, right now, am I content or do I feel like there's something I'm missing or something I'm not getting that I should be getting? Am I bitter? Like, if I have an issue with somebody and I hear about them or hear something good happen to them or something that I feel like I would like to have or experience. And like, is that producing bitterness in me? If there's a change at work, am I being pulled away by a lack of hope? And I think like, well, this is going to be terrible. And it makes me bitter and it makes me, cold, because you said like you don't have to be gregarious, but I would say that another marker of someone who exhibits a lot of joy is warmth.
Yeah, like,
you can be quiet but warm, but you can't be joyful and be cold. You can't be joyful and be unfeeling, you know, and stoic. What you're talking about, like reserved and quiet, those are adjectives to describe how this thing is displayed. They don't define that thing.
Right.
And there are some things you can't be if you're going to be joyful. So you can't be bitter. You can't be cold. You can't be unfeeling. You can't, those are the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't be joyfully divisive.
No, you can't be joyfully. Well, yeah, but it wouldn't be joy. It would not be biblical joy. You'd be like,
That's true. You can
rejoice in wrongdoing.
You can delight in wrongdoing. That's true. That is a good point.
So yeah, you're right. Like so we are talking, we should qualify. We're talking about Christ honoring joy here, like Christ like joy. You can't do that and like hope for failure for for people, or those would all be things that would be contrary to Christ like joy.
I think that's an important distinction.
It is the Christ like part?
Yes.
It usually is.
Finding delight in the suffering of others or the failure of others or the defeat of others, that is not Christ-like joy.
Yeah, I was gonna give an example, but I felt like maybe that would not be...
That's probably for the best.
Probably. I could have given
good
a
filter.
Silly
Look
sports
at you,
example.
Filtering.
Because what I was going to say was... What? I'm just kidding. See what I did there?
I do.
That would have been great. So yeah, you're opening your Bible, which makes me think you have something. I don't want to go on to another question if you had something that you were thinking about.
No, I was just making sure that I was remembering Galatians 5 correctly.
Well, that would be good.
Yes. It's not one you want to... As a general rule, I prefer not to misquote when I can.
Yeah.
But just talking about like what are the characteristics that surround that? I mean, the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And then the opposite of those things, the works of the flesh, are things like idolatry, enmity, strife, jealousy, anger, rivalries, divisions, dissensions, envy. Like, to it helps me put it in the context of like, well, what are Joy's buddies? What are the
right.
the siblings yep. of Joy? And it's kindness, it is patience, it is gentleness, it is love, it is peace. Like that helps me kind of round it out and say, if I can be happy and be delighting, I can be happy about division and strife, and I can be happy that that person failed because I was jealous of them, but that's not joy, because joy is joy when it's surrounded by mm-hmm. the other fruit of the Spirit, which are love and gentleness and kindness and these other things. Like, so it might help define it by putting it in its context, and what would supernaturally follow along with
right.
it.
Yeah, you know, and you think about rejoicing. So we're called to rejoice in the Lord always, and we're called.
I will say it again.
I'll say it again. Rejoice. But also, like, we are to rejoice with others, and you know, to mourn with them. And I've mentioned before, and I'm sure you've brought this up. A lot of people have brought this up, that I think as Christians, we tend to be better. Not awesome all the time, but we tend to be better at mourning with people than we are at rejoicing with people. I think we tend to be, you know, we see something happen that someone loses somebody or something tragic happens. By and large, now we've certainly had some issues of that of late of not nailing that, but I think overall, especially in our groups of friends, our family, we do that pretty well. I think rejoicing with one another is more challenging. And that in and of itself reveals a lack of joy.
Right.
Because if I'm overflowing with joy, then it's easy to rejoice with others. But if I've given over to bitterness, like if I always feel like I'm not getting what I deserve, or that I'm not, that I'm being overlooked, or I'm somehow being cheated out of something, or people aren't treating me the way that I deserve to be treated, or anything like that. That's bitterness starts to take root. And then it's very difficult to rejoice with other people. I mean, if you feel like you are treated poorly at work and you don't get what you deserve, how in the world would you rejoice with someone else that gets a promotion?
Right.
You're not going to.
No.
And I think that's a really critical thing. Like, what happens? You can tell. That's another litmus test of how joyful are you. Because the opposite is, when I feel like I'm just receiving blessing after blessing from God, that He is, whether things are going really well or not, but I just feel God's presence with me, and I feel like He sees me and He knows me and He's working in me and He loves me, and I see Him as a good Father who has just given countless mercies and kindnesses to me. Then when I see Him do it for you, do that same thing, then I get right. really excited about it.
Right.
Like,
yeah, He's doing it for you too.
Yeah. Isn't He great? And you said that
it
in a sermon.
It adds to
like,
my
yeah.
joy.
Right. Like, you're just like, everyone's pointing at, I mean, you gave that picture of eternity where like everyone's pointing at Jesus and they're not worried about any of these other differences they mm-hmm. had. They're like, hey, you love Him too? Like, He's the best. Yeah, He's your Jesus. He's my Jesus too. And there's this excitement about that. Yeah. And I think we need to not underestimate the power of that testimony. So you touched on that idea that the reason we are called to rejoice and to experience all this is so that the nations would know who our Father is, what He is like. And we forget that that's one of the big ways that we do it is by being joyful. And it is an incredible testimony. Like, if you want to build a bridge with somebody, if you want to express love to somebody, yes, mourn with them. Like, everyone feels comforted, you know, like if you get a card, they get a hug, whatever. But man, I'll tell you what, I think what stands out from the culture even more is when you are the person that rejoices with somebody.
Yep. Yes.
When you celebrate with them, when they go on the vacation and you're excited for them to go on the vacation, you're not thinking like, well, it must be nice. Like, I wish I got that much time off, or wish I could go do that, that you celebrate with them, that you're excited with them. We have friends like, so we went out, you know, we were gone on that vacation. The people that greeted us with, oh man, how was your trip? And then, you know, we'd share a couple of things and they were like, that's so exciting that you got to experience that. I'm so glad you got to have that. Those are the friends you want to share things with.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this too, that like, so when so many people that, you know, will talk to us about like, how do I build those bridges? How do I, How do I share the gospel with somebody? How do I build that friendship at work or my neighborhood? Well, one of the quickest ways is to rejoice with them, because when you are a rejoicer of things and celebrating with them, then they will want to share things with you. And then not only will that be the good things, but it will also be the hard things.
Yeah.
And then you'll have opportunities to weep with them. You'll be have opportunities to pray for them and to pray with them. It just is an incredible bridge builder. So I want to make sure you connect that, because you connected that well on Sunday, and it's connected in scripture that God gives us this kind of joy so that we would be a light among the nations, so that people would look at us and be like, man, that's a joyful crew.
So that we would look different from the people around us, like, so that we wouldn't respond the way everyone else responds with jealousy when you are getting something good, but that I would be able to respond with joy with you. We just read the works of the flesh, right? So the natural response, the factory setting is, I am jealous of the person who gets what I don't have. And yes, I can maybe mourn with the person who mourns, either because I can relate to that person or because there's a, you know, if we're honest, there's kind of a natural sense of superiority when something bad happens to someone else. I feel a little bit better that's not me. But when you get something better than me, I feel inferior. And so now I feel threatened and I get defensive, unless I'm filled with the Spirit of the living God. And then I go, whoa, look at how awesome the Father is for you too. And instead of that robbing me of joy, it feeds and fuels, it produces more joy in me. And then that is what makes us stand out. Not all the things that we typically assume are the things that make us stand out. Sometimes the things we assume do make us stand out, but not in the way that Jesus would want us to.
Right.
If only we could stand out for being so joyful in the midst of circumstances, regardless, inexplicably irrationally joyful, not irrational in the sense of foolishness that we're dismissive of reality, but we understand the reality of Jesus so much that it puts everything else in proper context. So I am able to genuinely, sincerely rejoice when great things happen to you. And even when something great happens to my nemesis, right? Yes. My enemy, to be able to say, God, you are so good. Even this person, you demonstrate your grace for them. That is just such an extraordinary picture of how badly I need that grace. And I hope and pray that you would use that to draw that person to yourself, so that maybe one day that would be my brother or sister. That's different.
Yeah, it is different. And I hope, and even that, when you think about, you know, even rejoicing with somebody, that would be, you would consider your enemy, or you consider on the opposite, you know, the opposite side of the aisle or whatever. You see that right now in our culture, people rejoicing over bad things happening to people they disagree with because they feel vindicated. And that is not a Christ-like attitude at all. Jesus weeps over Jerusalem. God does not delight in the death of the wicked. We are called to weep even with those who suffer because of evil. Like, even if somebody is suffering at their own hand, we still are called to weep with that, and we want to rejoice in good things for others. And again, you talk about bridge building. I mean, man, imagine going up to a person like your nemesis at work who gets a promotion and being the first one to congratulate them.
Yeah.
And then I think all of this then comes back to, and so then when we suffer, that's what also makes us look different, because when we suffer as those with no hope. We do so with hope, which is a form of joy. And so when we have joy in that means we aren't getting bitter, we're not getting disenchanted with things around us, we're not becoming harsh. Now I'm not saying that, you know, if you feel any of those things, like, you should, like, well, then, you know, I don't want to condemn that. Like, there's a season in that, but what we're talking about is not giving ourselves over to that. Like, you have to fight against that. When you do meet trials and you say, okay, how am I going to rejoice in this? I think it'd be helpful to think, okay, that means I'm not giving myself over to bitterness. I'm going to choose joy, which means I'm going to choose to be hopeful. I'm going to choose to believe God that he still is who he says he is, that he is going to work this together for good, that he is going to restore this. And then be amazed at the joy that he brings about. And then that is another huge testimony to the world. So that, you know, when you're rejoicing with people, and then when you're still rejoicing in the Lord in the midst of hard circumstances, and all of that sets us apart. So when we talk about holiness and God setting us apart, that's how he does it. It's not primarily through behavior modification. It is through the joy that we have in our Father.
Yeah. Through heart transformation, which then leads to different behavior, certainly.
Correct.
But it's not outside in, it's inside out.
Right. Amen to that.
It's good. It's good.
It's good.
It makes me feel joyful.
Does it? I can tell. You should tell your face.
Oh, man.
You walked right in that one.
I did.
Oh, hey, by the way, you know, this is like this whole thing. You told me that I'm supposed to be more joyful, or that I should be smiling more. Not that I should be more joyful, but I should smile more. And then you noticed that you don't smile as much.
I feel like I made it worse for myself. Yeah. When I called you out on that, now, for whatever reason, I have stopped smiling when I go up there. So now I there are multiple times on Sunday where I was like, oh, I'm not smiling. I should smile.
I know. But they should not mistake that for a lack of joy. So,
correct.
You talked about serious joy. Like, I'm often on Sunday morning, like I like to make jokes, but even when I'm joking, I have a dry personality or dry
sense of humor. Well, and for me, it's if my concentration face looks like I have a concentration frown. So if I'm thinking really hard about something, I look somewhere between heartbroken and enraged, depending on how hard I'm concentrating.
Oh, wow.
So
enraged.
Oh, Robbie enraged.
I think I just look confused. I'm thinking really hard. Did everybody listening to this get that?
I don't think they saw your face.
This is why we should put these on YouTube.
Oh.
No, never. All right. Never. Well, do you have anything else helpful? Or are we good? Oh, you gave me the point. Finger sign. Remember we talked about this. I'm supposed to like narrate all of your...
Now it's your
cues.
Turn to close the podcast, Jay.
All right. Well, allow me. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We're glad that you're listening to this. And if you listen to these last couple of minutes, I apologize. But hopefully it's been helpful as you pursue joy and fight for joy and choose joy. And because we have so much to be joyful about, our Father who loves us, who sent his Son to live the life we couldn't live and die the death that we deserve so that we could be with him for all eternity. It's a pretty incredible thing. And so we should be marked by our joy. So I pray that for you this week. And until next week, grace and peace.